sunlight to come rising. Wow. 720 WGN. It is Dane here with you in the Skyline Studio, high atop Chicago. In today with us until noon, and an eclectic kind of blend of things, but also having a little bit of touch of the holidays coming up, Thanksgiving coming up, some of the gift-giving ideas, and some of the festivities that are happening around Chicago as well. And stay tuned, because we are going to have a Christmas tree to give away from Tree Times. We're going to have something available. It won't be as big as the one that's happening and being lit and honored and showcased today, but it will be great. Certainly big enough for your house. On the line with us, we've got the program director for the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, the one and only Carrie Sheehan. Carrie, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Dane. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. It feels like it's a little bit of fall, right? It's not that cold, but we're kind of getting into the spirit, into the mode for holiday time, for Thanksgiving, for Christmas, and for all those things that it means. And I think events like the tree lighting and the commemoration and all those things that kind of give us, I don't want to say license, right? Because everybody is sort of on the fence of, is it too early to celebrate this? Should you put things up as far as decoration? Should the store be selling things? But I think after today, you know, we've got the high sign.
We do. We do for sure. And we're definitely going to kick things off tonight in Millennium Park.
So talk a little bit about the process, because there are people even in the city and the suburbs who aspire for a little bit of history, immortality, stardom when it comes to the residents of their community, of their yard, right? How do they pick the tree? Because I always hear that, you know, there's this big search and you got to have a tree that I'm supposing is of a certain size, right? And it's got to be a great specimen of whatever. But it's kind of an honor, right, to have your tree chosen to represent the city.
You know, I think it is a huge honor, and it's, you know, it's an interesting and very collaborative process. We put a call out to just the general masses and let them know that what we're doing and what we're looking for, and there are some parameters that go along with that. And then people send in their stories, their photos, and everything gets reviewed here internally, and then one lucky family gets their tree selected. And this year we went out to Elgin to the Nelson family, and they very graciously have given us a magnificent 55-foot tree that I'm looking out right outside my window right now.
That's pretty great. So congratulations to the Nelsons. This is, I think maybe you take a picture of yourself with that tree. Maybe it hangs over the mantle or gets displayed. I mean, that tree really gets a celebrity status within the family. This is the 106th annual Chicago Christmas tree lighting. Was the tree always kind of so big and so grand, or, you know, way back in the day, was it just maybe somebody's kind of bush or something like that? How have things changed?
Yeah, I think it's gone through many different iterations, different sizes, actually even displayed in different parts of the city. And now it resides right here in Millennium Park. Right when you come down Washington Street, it will be the first thing you see as you get to Michigan Avenue. And we, you know, really over the past decade have moved to the format where we are selecting a family who has a tree in their yard, and in general, it's a tree that is quite beloved, but also something that has maybe become too large and is infringing on the space. You know, in many cases, they might need it removed. So we kind of look at it as a win-win for both sides, and that was certainly the case with the Nelson family. So we went out a couple weeks ago, and a really wonderful team removed it from the yard and delivered it here to Millennium Park, and it's been very carefully adorned with, I think, something in the vicinity of 55,000 lights. And right at the end of our ceremony, as we come into the 6:30 moment, we are going to light it up and close out our concert with fireworks off the top of the Cultural Center.
It's the kind of thing, it kicks off now, and it's going to be kind of showcased tonight. It's going to be something that's going to be celebrated, and people are going to go and visit it throughout the holiday season. Carrie, hold tight. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk about the events that are going to happen tonight for people to get in on it. You know, the music, the pageantry, the hosts, right? Some very near and dear to us here at WGN as well. So hold tight. We're going to come back with more from Carrie Sheehan about tonight's Christmas tree lighting ceremony. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. And we are back, 720 WGN, and on the line with us, we're highlighting something that is happening at 6 p.m. tonight is big. It is the lighting of the Christmas tree, but want to highlight the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. They are the people that bring us so many of the great parades, Gospel Fest, the Jazz Fest, the Farmers Markets, all of the different things that we love to get out and enjoy throughout the course of the city. And tonight on center stage, excited to have back with us, we've got Carrie Sheehan. Carrie, welcome back to WGN.
How are you doing?
I am doing okay. So coming up at 6 p.m., you've got an event. So it isn't just, hey, let's plug it in, let's turn it on. You've got great hosts, great MCs. You've got a different program, a way for people to kind of enjoy this, not only just as an occasion, but also a pretty cool event.
We do. So we're going to really sort of start to kick things off around 5:45. We'll have an amazing family mariachi ensemble called Cielito Lindo, and they're going to start playing around 5:45. At 6 o'clock, we officially will kick off the tree lighting ceremony. We have a wonderful lineup of musical guests. We have Jonathan Butler, Skylar Stecker. We have the Greenhouse Theater's production of Eleanor's Very Merry Christmas Wish, which will be really fantastic. And, you know, of course, we're honored to have Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Commissioner Mark Kelly, and the whole event will be hosted by Brittany and Jarrett Payton.
I noticed here one that you're missing too. Santa and Mrs. Claus are going to be there as well, time permitting, right? They're going to make have a few comments as well.
Yes. So Mrs. Claus and her husband, as she has told me she would like it to be phrased, they will be here this evening. I had the great privilege of spending the morning with them doing various press things. They're extremely excited and honored to be a part of the event. So they will be mingling about before the show, and then they will join the Nelson family and others up on stage to pull that ceremonial switch. So the lights will go on right when we get close to the 6:30 time, and then those fireworks will take off.
Wow. That's nice to see. You got information, too, at millenniumpark.org where you can see some of the schedules and you know where to go as far as the directions and all the ways that you can get out there and participate and enjoy it. When we first got back into the segment, we talked about all the things that you guys do. This is, of course, highlighting this occasion, but you guys are never stopping when it comes up to the holiday time. You've got a bunch of things that people are going to be able to get in on. You've got the ice skating, the MP Art Market, the DJ nights. Talk a little bit about some of the things people are going to enjoy as we get towards the end of the year.
For sure. So we opened the rink last week, which is fantastic. It's open 7 days a week. And I, you know, do want to mention that 3 days a week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the hour before the rink opens each day, the city provides free ice skating lessons for anyone. People of all ages can come out. So that is happening, like I said, every day of the week. On the first and third Thursdays of each month, we're going to have live DJs out at the rink. We started this last year, and it was really popular, so that is definitely not to be missed. As you mentioned, we have for the second year a really cool art market that's happening right in Millennium Park. It's focusing on and featuring the works of students from the Art Institute of Chicago, as well as Columbia College Chicago, so you can come on down and pick up all of your Christmas gifts that you need. And then next Friday, we start our Caroling at Cloudgate series, which is really presented in a format that's very inclusive and sing-along-esque. Programs are passed out, and so everybody, I mean, yes, come and hear some amazing singers, some amazing talent, but really it's about bringing people together and having everybody sing as a group, both the audience and the folks that are up on stage.
When it comes to the caroling side of things, you know, there's a lot of different opportunities to showcase different musical styles. Do you have, like, different groups that you highlight, or is it just people that come in from the city? I know singing along, so everybody that's viewing can kind of get in on the action as well.
I tried to put together, a diverse lineup of styles and people. The very first choir is called the Sounds Good Choir, and they are made up of folks that are all over the age of 55. They're coming in from all over the Chicagoland area. I think 125 of those singers will be coming down. So this is their first time performing down at Cloudgate, and they're really excited. The next week we have Mark Hubbard and the Voices, which will be presenting in a gospel style format, and they're going to be really beautiful. The next week after that, we have the Chicago Children's Choir, nice. Which I'm sure you've heard of, and they're returning to Cloud Gate. They've performed there before, but that'll be wonderful to see younger people out in the park. And then we're going to close out the series with the Wicker Park Choral Singers on December 20th. So each of those events are on, as I said, Friday nights, and it runs from 6 to 7 p.m. And those events, just like everything else that we're doing, is completely free and open to the public.
Now, here's the thing. So, and you mentioned how inclusive, of course, City Proper, and that's where, you know, the organization is based, but bringing in the tree is from Elgin, right? The singers are coming from all over the Chicagoland area, maybe even further, to kind of be celebrity carolers there with the Bean or Cloud Gate. Do you guys ever think about, you know, how it is the kind of thing where people, you know, we all sort of think of ourselves as Chicagoans, regardless of what your address says, and that, you know, how you do pull people not only from obviously the city to come see and experience some of these things, but from the suburbs, even from maybe the greater Midwest. Do you guys have a handle on that?
You know, we do. We certainly, you know, for a lot of our larger events, I mean, you know, we might be bringing in 50% of folks that are actually from outside of the city limits. So it's definitely both, and obviously, depending on what it is that we're presenting, it might change the demographics of the audience just a little bit. But I do feel like the tree lighting ceremony, it feels very Chicago to me. I know that so many people have just now built this into their annual family traditions. So we have tons of people that are just residents of Chicago and coming in from the suburbs, and also some people that have made Chicago a part of their their travel season.
Let the listeners know we're talking with Carrie Sheehan, Program Director for the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events for the City of Chicago. One of the last things, and this is, you know, a tale as old as time. The first time that I had ever seen the Nutcracker, I thought it was traumatic. You know, of course, you have the mice running around and you've got these, you know, crazy Nutcracker guys running around, but it's the Christmas story that people embrace. And now you've built in an opportunity not for people just to sit and enjoy it, but also dance along. How does this work?
So yeah, this is certainly the event that tops the cute chart, as I would say. So on Sunday, December 8th, we have what is called the Dance Along Nutcracker. So once again, it's a very both participatory and spectator event. So we have free dance lessons that are going to take place at 9 a.m. and noon here in the Chicago Cultural Center. And then there are performances that will take place at 10 a.m. and at 1 p.m. Once again, all in the Cultural Center. This is all completely free. And it's just a really, really adorable little event. And I encourage everybody to come down with their young ones.
MillenniumPark.org is the website. We'll have links up at WGNRadio.com tonight. It is all happening. Star studded cast, including Mrs. Claus and her husband, the aforementioned Santa, 6 p.m. that is down at Wrigley Square, Michigan Avenue, and Washington Street. Carrie will be there along with everybody else for the 106th annual Christmas tree lighting. And so I want to thank you for everything that you guys are doing. This is some fun things, taking something that everybody enjoys throughout the course of the year. Certainly the visuals are great, but turning it into a great event that we can all talk about, enjoy, get in on, and experience. So Carrie, thanks so much for jumping on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So here's the thing. So this is the tree that you get to. It's 54 feet high. It's got thousands, tens of thousands of lights, 54,825 lights adorning the tree from the nice Nelson family out there in Elgin. Here's an opportunity to get your own tree. It won't be as big, I don't think. Of course, Tree Time has a great selection. But this is to win a certificate for, is this for the desktop one? Okay, so unless you have a giant desk, who knows if you're Paul Bunyan, significantly smaller. This is a certificate for the desktop pre-lit sports theme artificial tree from Tree Time Christmas Creations. We have a contest. A winner can win this. Visit treetime.com or their showroom on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington for the most spectacular selection of Christmas trees, lights, and ornaments that you can't find anywhere. But we've got a certificate to win for this. And Jazzy, what do you think? The fifth caller? We'll do that.
Sure. Can we do two?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm feeling generous. Callers 5 and 7.
Callers 5 and 7 will win one of those trees. 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200. Can call in, talk to Jazzy. We'll pick two winners and we'll give it away when we come back. Quick break. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. And here we are. High atop Chicago in the Skyline studio. And on the line with us now, we have a guy that has traveled all over the place. We've talked a little bit about transformative travel, not only as kind of a gift-giving suggestion or an option, but something to get out there and experience. Steve Bertrand does the travel and kind of shares some of the benefits of that. And when it comes to the lighting of the Christmas tree that we just talked with that's happening here in Chicago, the guy that just came back from not only the City of Lights, Paris, France, but also the rest of it, is the dining and drinking editor for New City Magazine, the one and only Dave Hammond. Dave, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
So, Dave, you travel an awful lot. We did a little bit of a teaser yesterday. I know that we switched up a little bit of the timing between the 12 and 1, but you got a chance to kind of feature some of the things that you get out there, you do. Whether you're traveling, whether it's Mexico or Thailand, or giving travel to family as, you know, one of those kind of alternative gift-giving situations. Mm-hmm. But also even for work, you're out there kind of experiencing the food and the culture. And France is one of the places that I think has become more accessible. Long time had a reputation as a place that was a little icy, a little prickly when it comes to their relationships or thought process for America and Americans. Is that something that you've experienced, or as we have learned more, they have also learned more, and we're coming together?
I think they like us. I like the French. I think a lot of Americans do too. I mean, they've been great friends over the years, you know, since the Revolutionary War, you know. And I think we had kind of a rough spot with the Iraqi War when they didn't join us, and something I don't personally blame them for. But, things are all cool now. They call them French fries again, not American fries. And they're making cognac, which we drink a lot of. Here's a fun fact. I mean, I went to France this last time to visit the cognac producers in that region, like Courvoisier and Hennessy, Martel, those guys. Most of the cognac in the world, all of it's produced in France. Most of it is consumed by people in the United States. Only 2% of the cognac produced in France is consumed in France. Most of it's consumed by Americans, with China coming in a distant second, I should say. And in the United States, over half the cognac is consumed in African-American households, which I find very interesting. And a lot of, maybe you know this, but there's lots of hip-hop artists, Jay-Z, Snoop Dogg, Ludacris, P. Diddy. They all own pieces of cognac producers in France. They know that, you know, who their public is, and their public likes to drink this stuff. If you've ever, we live in Oak Park, right outside Chicago, west of Chicago. Driving in through the west side of Chicago, largely African American neighborhood, Martell, Hennessy signs are all over the place. That's who's being marketed to, and these cognac producers have been good to those communities, too. Hennessy was the first corporate sponsor of the NAACP, for instance.
Wow.
So there's a close connection there. And I asked some folks in cognac, you know, at Hennessy and Martell and so on, how did this happen? I mean, was it just a marketing thing? And marketing surely played into it. But I heard from more than one person representing these cognac producers that after World War II, there were a lot of African-American GIs in Europe fighting. African Americans were treated quite well in France, probably better than they were in the United States at that time. So they became enamored of things French, and when they came back to the United States, they brought their love of cognac with them. That's a theory. I don't know how you would ever prove that, but that seems it seems plausible, or it's just all a marketing thing.
Yeah.
I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah, probably a little bit of both. Well, it's undeniably good. I think it's got fans all over. I think the full scope of demographics can enjoy cognac, but a little bit of the education side. You've got your globe out. You know, it's kind of along the lines, right, of champagne or even tequila, right? In order to have that word, you can have things that are technically, and if you do the 23andMe, that's basically the same stuff. But if it isn't grown specifically in those regions, it's like a brand name, right, that you have to call it one thing or another. So for cognac, describe, you know, kind of where it is in the in the scope of things.
Cognac region is in southwestern France. It's right above Bordeaux, which a lot of people know is a huge wine-producing region, and cognac is made from wine. It's distilled wine. It's a type of brandy. But to call it cognac, it has to be made in that region, and it has to be aged a certain amount of time. It's called an eau de vie, like a water of life, before it's been aged. After it's been aged 2 years, you can call it VS, very special. If it's aged 4 years, it's VSOP, and it used to be, if it was aged 6 years, it would be XO. That designation has changed, though. Now it's 10 years to be XO. And what that means is, if you buy a bottle of XO, and that's like the top drawer stuff, that's going to be the most expensive type of cognac, the youngest cognac in that bottle will be 10 years old, which means that you could have cognac in there that's much older than 10 years. They just blend it. And a big part of the cognac maker's art is blending different barrels to get exactly the right taste that they're looking for. They have, this is kind of funny, in all the distilleries we went to, and I mentioned Courvoisier and Martel, Hennessy, they have a part of their cellar, their wine cellar, cognac cellar, called Paradise. And in the, and frequently there's like a locked iron gate in front of this section of the cellar, because in that cellar they keep all the old cognac from going back to, you know, like the 19th century. I saw some and before, and they use that still to blend to this day. Usually, and for the higher end cognacs, of course. So you could buy a bottle of XO, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be at least 10 years old, but it could be, they could have stuff in there from the 19th century that they're blending into it to get that precise flavor that they want. And there's always a little bit of play in there. You know, the stuff is being made by, not by machines, but by artists, really, who are taking all the different cognacs and making the flavor they want.
Well, David, is it, you know, is it that you can say there's a certain percentage of that particular cognac that is aged, you know, in that that esteemed bottle from a long, long time ago? Or is it kind of like the pork and beans thing, where it says pork and beans on it, but there's just a very small piece of pork in there?
Well, if it says 10 years, if it's XO, it has to be 10 years, and that means the youngest cognac in there will be 10 years. You can be sure of that. And that means 10 years, and there's probably cognac in there that's older than just 10 years. So if anything, 10 years is like the minimum that it's going to be. And that means it's been in the barrel, a French oak barrel, for at least 10 years. And the barrel is what gives the cognac a lot of its flavor. Just like with bourbon or, you know, American whiskey, American spirit. The barrel is what gives it, like, the vanilla and sugary notes that we love.
He is the dining and drinking editor for New City Magazine, and so a lot of the stuff that he does, he is always imbibing and checking out and kind of coming back and reporting on the scenes wherever he goes. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk a little bit about the family travel side of things, maybe the art, some of the things that you can see in France, as well as kind of alternatives on the tourism side. So you're going to want to get in there and see the Mona Lisa. You're going to want to see the Louvre. You're going to want to walk along the Champs-Élysées. But there's a lot of things on the food side that have turned into bona fide tourism and travel opportunities as well. So excited to talk with Dave Hammond about that when we come back from this break. Wanted to mention in our Tree Time giveaway that our winners for the fifth caller, Lorena from Lake Barrington, which is right out there in Tree Time territory. Maybe she can pick it up instead of have it sent. And then Chet from Frankfurt also won as well. And so they got a chance to win. Just to let them know, and of course you can go buy one yourself, but they got the desktop pre-lit sports theme artificial tree from Tree Time Christmas Creations. Visit treetime.com or their showroom out on Pepper Road. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more with Dave Hammond. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. WGN, it is Dane here with you in the Skyline Studio, high atop Chicago on a beautiful Friday. Weather-wise, I think we're in the kind of 40s, 50s, and every day that it's not super snowy or cold is a day closer to the day where statistically it cannot be. And if you're stuck here in the wintertime during the holidays, you could just get away, take your family, get out there, travel. You could go any place that may be warmer, even a temperate climate like France. And a guy who just came back from there is going to talk about travel as alternative gifts and kind of give us some insight into the somewhat and sometimes mysterious world of France and the French. Is a dining and drinking editor for New City, Dave Hammond. Dave, welcome back.
Hey, Dan. You mentioned the Louvre before we went on break, and I've been visiting France since like 1971. And every time I've gone to Paris, I've gone to the Louvre. You kind of have to. I mean, it's the most visited museum in the world. It's got, as you say, the Mona Lisa. It's a wonderful place. This time, though, I actually vowed I'm not going to the Louvre, even though I was staying at a place called Hotel de Louvre, which is like right next door. I ended up dropping in. But basically, I wanted to see some things I hadn't seen before, and that meant going underground. In one case, I went to see the catacombs in Paris, which were just mind-blowing. They were a lot of Paris is built of limestone that was created, millions of years ago when there was a body of water over what is now France. And, the little crustaceans, clams, and so on, they die, they fall to the bottom, they create limestone over the eons. This limestone was then mined, they dug down, got this limestone out, and started building Notre Dame and other buildings around Paris. Problem was that created a very unstable landscape because, you got holes under the city. Right. So they trussed up the ground, and right about this time, the cemeteries in Paris were becoming overflowing. They were having problems with, during the plague years, like, a third of the people in Paris died or half, some huge amount of people.
Yeah, right.
So they had all these bodies that were piling up, and they, got to do something with this too. So some guy had the bright idea, well, let's just put them in the old limestone mines. Okay, but being Parisians, being French, they decided to do something artistic with these bones. So what they've done is they've piled up mostly skulls and femurs, which are the long leg bone, in these gigantic caverns underneath Paris. I walked from one end to the other, and it was like, quarter mile, half mile. It was a long way. And all along the walls, there are these piles, neat piles, very carefully, precisely laid out piles of skulls and femurs. Sometimes they're in a heart shape. That's kind of corny, not usual. Usually they're just some kind of abstract design with these, Latin phrases about the fragility of human life and all that stuff, which is fine, But but it was such an eerie experience and extraordinarily popular. I usually don't buy tickets in advance to things. I mean, like exhibits or things like the catacombs, attractions, let's say. But for this, it was really recommended for this, and I'm so glad I did because there was a huge, gigantic line outside, and it was raining. It rains a lot in November. So I had my ticket, boom, in the door, down there with the audio guide, and just walking through these caves, block after block of caves.
They're like,
lined.
They're like hallways, right? I've been there,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
It's like it's like a narrow hallway sometime. And the bones, you can just reach and touch the bones. I mean, they're just
they recommend
there.
You not do that.
I know. But, and they also search you when you leave. They search your bag to make sure you don't take
something. You got a skull in there? You hide a femur under that?
But it's dark and pretty eerie.
And that's WGN's C. Bertrand. It's so strange, and you got to figure that some maybe non-traditional tourist attractions like a giant, mile-long hallway of skulls, right, is going to exist in certain places, especially when the history is attached. Do you feel like that it's because so much is known about it and it's been commercialized that it is what it is and you're noticing the art? Or do you really kind of take in just the humanity that is represented there in all of those bodies?
What I found it helpful to do to that point is instead of just like cruising down the hall and taking it all in, I would sometimes just stop in front of a skull. I mean, it sounds kind of morbid, but stop in front of a skull and just kind of look at it and think, God, this guy was alive 300 years ago.
Yeah, that's Larry.
I know that guy.
Well, okay, on the family side, I think on the education side, like that is something definitely to see. It's a big part of the history, and it's something that we really don't have here in the United States. We have places that are kind of old, but when you get into Europe, you're looking, at 1,000 plus years of people, right, and all the things that go with them, including dead bodies and death and all those things. Now, Paris is long considered the most beautiful city in the world. You think of the City of Lights, and of course you've got Eiffel Tower and the Louvre, these other kind of mainstream marquee tourist attractions. What is it about it that makes it considered to be so beautiful? Is it that, because in my mind I'm hearing kind of the music or I'm seeing the outdoor cafes, and of course you've got the river. What is it that makes it like so beautiful?
I noticed on this trip, and this is such an obvious thing, I'm surprised I didn't notice it before, but there's clearly a height restriction on buildings. So, like, looking down the Champs-Élysées toward the Arc of Triumph, all the buildings are the same size. You don't have any, like, like in Chicago, which is, I think, also a beautiful thing about Chicago, you have all these buildings, huge, tall buildings of different sizes. That's the Chicago skyline, and it's awesome. But in Paris, they kind of, and this must, I mean, they must have instituted this sometime in the 19th century, but all the buildings are kind of the same level. They go up to, like, 8 stories or something like that, so you can take in these huge vistas down, like, the Champs-Élysées. And all over Paris, you can see, or like at the top of Notre Dame, you can see over the whole city, virtually unimpeded. And there's a certain similarity to the buildings too. I think it's Haussmann who designed a lot of those boulevards. So they look. There's a uniformity and a sense of artistic control over the construction of the city. Also, there's a river going through it, which makes it beautiful. And it's very, it's romantic. I mean, that Paris is like the quintessential romantic city. And I got to say, I was walking along the street, and I saw lots of, men and women just, or men and men, just kind of, smooching. oh, that's nice. Everybody's getting along here. It's a place that kind of brings out the romance in everybody. And I would agree that it's the most beautiful city in the world that I know of. I mean, there's probably other cities that might compete, but it's a gorgeous place.
Okay, so smooching, and that's all. Love is a beautiful thing, I think, in general, right? And so when it's happening in quantity on the streets of where you are, that's always a positive thing. When it comes, and you mentioned it, and we've got a few minutes left, you mentioned the Louvre, you mentioned the Mona Lisa, and I've heard that there's some, it's a big museum, it's a famous museum, I'm sure there's lots of great things inside of it, yeah. Is that the Mona Lisa is almost getting too popular, right? Where people just come in to see that.
Yeah, and or like Venus that without the the statue, that white statue without the arms on it, I couldn't get within like 10 yards of that. I mean, wow. there were people standing there shooting pictures on their iPhone, which, people are excited about art. I'm not going to complain about that. That's cool, but it does mean that, and I got there when I went to the Louvre just last week. I got in because my hotel was so close. I thought, what the hell, I'll stop in early in the morning, and I was there like when it opened, and I just shot right over to like the Venus. There were already huge crowds of people around it shooting pictures. So I decided that I would go to places that no one else was checking out. So I went to like Mesopotamian art and old rooms of Louis Couture's and so on, just to, because those are places I hadn't been to before. One thing I would like to mention, this kind of off, I was walking along the first day, and I saw a street vendor selling Chicago hot dogs, and I thought, I gotta try this. I actually had just had lunch, but it's like, I'm still going to eat this hot dog just to see what it is. And it was, they actually did a very good job. I mean, Chicago hot dogs, it's dressed with a pickle, sport peppers, relish, and mustard on a bun. It's actually a poppy seed bun. Now, in France, they didn't use a poppy seed bun, but I'll say that was the best bun I've ever had a hot dog in. I mean,
they know their buns, that's for sure.
And they know the bread. Yeah, I mean, French bread, what's better than that? And the relish wasn't the kind of glow-in-the-dark relish that we're used to on a Chicago hot dog, but it was relish, and it really surprised me. They put sport peppers on there too.
Nice.
Which is like that I was not expecting, because French are kind of heat averse. I mean, it's not really a chili heavy, chili forward food. It's a pretty subtle food, French food. So I figured they're not going to put any, chili peppers on there. But they did, which I thought was like, wow, that's really trying to keep the faith there with the Chicago hot dog.
Well, now we know that the olive branch of food similarities has been traded, right? The detente is in place. And
it's in place, right.
In the last minute or so that we have, is there some things, suggestions that you can make for people to go and check out as far as like on the family side or some things? Certainly all of those things people would normally do, but maybe some suggestions, and then cost-wise, maybe a little bit on that. We've just got a few seconds, but
okay,
it would be great.
I mentioned the Père Lachaise Cemetery, which is a huge cemetery in Paris. Oscar Wilde is there, Edith Piaf. I went to pay respects to the Lizard King, Jim Morrison. There were families visiting there, and it's free. And it's like a beautiful park with these gorgeous, like Gothic sarcophaguses, I guess you'd say, like these little houses where the dead are put in there. And they've been putting dead people in there for so long, they don't even know how many they have there. Some people say it's 300,000. Some people say it's 3 million. And it's beautiful. I mean, it's laid out like an English garden, so there are all kinds of like little twisty paths. And I went there one afternoon, and it was packed with families, with, you know, couples, of course, couples everywhere, and a few single weirdos like me.
Dave Ammons with his, he's got the cognac for you, and of course his posthumous travel company that we're going to be launching in no time flat.
I see dead people is what it's called.
in France with Dave Hammond. And last thing, where people can find you, follow your adventures and all the great stories you got.
New City, Chicago, the best place.
All right.
On your news rack and online.
If I don't talk to you before Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving. And thanks, Dave. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and we come back, we will have more. It's Dane here on 720 WGN.
Tomorrow night,
the Chicago Blackhawks,
the Dallas Stars,
the pregame.
This is cool music. Thanks, Jen. 720 WGN. It is Dane here in the Skyline studio. And when it comes to TV, we all watch it. And we're watching it and consuming television in different ways than maybe we have in the past. But it's still front and center when it comes to entertainment in a lot of different ways. And we've been talking over the last couple of days about alternative gifts, things that people can do. And now, as crazy as it may have sounded a few years ago, but giving people subscriptions to some of the streaming services seems like a pretty cool gift. And there's some great stuff to see, not only on the just the general side, but also when it comes to specific entertainment for the holidays. And on the line with us, you know, we have him on as on a regular basis. It's Alexander Zabin. He's the managing editor for Desire.com. You know his work from TV Guide, MTV News, MTV Geek, Hugo, AMC, and more. He's been slapped you've been slapped by John Cleese in your bio. So we're definitely going to mention it. Alexander, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. So, and thanks for the lengthy resume. I appreciate that, too.
Well, you want to have people know, because whenever anyone suggests that word of mouth, that recommendation from someone that you know and trust, weighs a lot more than maybe a commercial saying it's great or very fine print thumbs up recommendations from movie or TV reviewers. If you have someone that you know has a background and an opinion, I think you can trust it.
Yeah, well, hopefully I turn out to be trustworthy. I hope I pay off on your faith.
No, you are, because, okay, so we talked a little bit about Fleabag in some of the other times where we had you on some of these series where you have come out and actually inspired not only me, but I'm sure countless listeners to go and check some of these out. And then lo and behold, you know, your thoughts, I think, are kind of verified by the awards and things like that when they win things. Not for everybody on the holiday side. So when it comes to holiday, there's a couple suggestions here. The Night Before Christmas, and for the listeners that can't see what I'm reading, it's Night with a KN. So it's like the round table style night. And I wanted to do a little bit of due diligence, and so I got a chance to check out a few minutes of it. I wanted to see just what it was. You know, you got Vanessa Hudgens from High School Musical, and then you've got, you know, that tale that is also as old as time, you know, the time travel and kind of jousting, right? And here we have it. So what do you think?
Well, Netflix has been kind of great about putting out these very cheesy, but exactly what you want out of a holiday rom-com. You know, you don't want something too hard. You want something fun, something where the leads are charming, they're enjoyable, there's a couple of good jokes. It has that holiday feel to that. And they've had some mixed results. Some of them are pretty bad, to be perfectly honest. But The Night Before Christmas, according to our reviewers at Decider, is very good. And Vanessa Hudgens is very funny in it. She falls in love with a time-traveling medieval knight who comes there over Christmas, of course. But she is kind of turning it to the Netflix holiday queen. She had another movie called The Princess Switch, which, again, you can kind of figure out what it was from the title, but it's a very, I was about to say country mouse, city mouse. That's not what it is. Prince of the Pauper. That's what it is. So it's that, but she's a princess. Turns out she has a twin who's a commoner. They switch places. That was another big hit for them, and they're doing a sequel for it. And it's kind of great. Like, it's a nice little niche industry that she has paid out to make these very cheesy but very fun rom-coms for Netflix that you can just check out at home.
Yeah, people love cheese. I think my wife is one of those that loves it, because I handed her the phone, say, check this out, then I want to check out the latest Dolly Parton thing, which we'll talk about a little bit after the break, and I couldn't get the phone away from her. She's like, no, this is the exact kind of movie that I like. even though it seems, I don't know, in a word, implausible, right? Of course, the time traveling night, and then there's that whole kind of fish slash night out of water, and then I think there was even an homage to Back to the Future, where somebody hits somebody with a car, and then you need to, because this is the way, anytime I see anyone hit by a car, I take them in as a guest in my home, and that happens here too.
Absolutely. I assume they're a time traveler or something magical is going on with them, and we kind of go from there. You know, I mean, to your point, though, it's interesting to me, I think, in critical circles, people sort of undervalue that part of the point of Netflix is to find something easy to watch over the weekend. There's a lot of focus put on peak TV and these really important dramas, which are great, and I love, that TV is better now than it has ever been before. But most of the time, folks just want to unwind over the weekend. So having something like the Night Before Christmas, we can just turn it on with the family for an hour and a half and just chill out and watch it. That's great.
When we come back from the break, we're going to talk with Alexander Zalbin about Dolly Parton. She's in there. Again, she's not remaking 9 to 5 or anything, but she is kind of taking what it is that she has on the iconic song side and then translating that into kind of episodes that carry either the theme of the song, and there's a little bit of narration to it. It's kind of cool, and for people that love Dolly Parton, and who doesn't, they'll be pleased. And then we'll get into some of the other series that are coming up and available as well. Maybe we'll even get Alexander to talk a little bit about The Mandalorian. We'll see. When we come back from the break. So quick break. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. And we are back, 720 WGN, here in the Skyline studio, talking a little bit of TV traditions and some of the ways that the watching has sort of changed. And on the line with us, we have Alexander Zalbin from Desider.com. I got to tell you, Alexander, like, we have totally changed in the last, I would say, year and a half, as like kind of, I would consider us a relatively typical family, you know, three kids and two adults. We have Hulu, we have Netflix, we have Sling for the local programming, and now, of course, like so many others, we've signed on to the Disney Plus. And I've got to say, because some of the stuff is included in your cell phone plan, if you get the right plan, they just gave us Hulu, so we have that. We work on sort of a relative co-op for the Netflix, and then the Sling is pretty reasonable. So I think we're somewhere in the $40 range for all of that entertainment. That's including the Disney Plus as well. I mean, is this typical? Is this the kind of the wave of the future? People are consuming TV just this way?
You know, there's a lot of questions about this right now, and actually there was a big article that came out, I believe, in Hollywood Reporter today, where they were pointing out that there's potentially going to be a stopgap down the road, that you have companies like Roku and Amazon Fire Stick and all these proprietary devices that right now run everything, which is great for the consumer because, to your point, you can get a lot of different services in a lot of different ways. But there may be a point in the future that they might say, well, hold on a second, we need better deals there for our Roku Stick. We're going to upcharge, we're going to cut down on the services, we're going to have our own service. You know, there's a lot of possibilities there, because eventually companies do want to make a lot of money and they want to pump the money back into themselves. So potentially something like that would happen. But right now, to your point, the absolute best thing you can do as a consumer is really look into where the deals are. For example, and this is my own fault, I was paying for HBO for a really long time until about 2 weeks ago. I turned to my wife and I said, wait a second, we get it free through AT&T. What are we doing? So just, you know, if you do have some of those pay service, like you were saying, Disney Plus, you can get a year free through Verizon. HBO Max, which is coming next year, I believe is also going to be free through AT&T. And that's going to cost about the same as regular HBO subscription. So they're going to push a lot of deals like that initially. And as much as you can take advantage of them, the better it's going to be on your wallet.
So new ways to enjoy things and maybe some of those old favorites as well. Dolly Parton's Heartstrings, watched a little bit of this, and it's great to have her kind of narrating things. But does Dolly Parton have enough of like a broad fan base to really kind of drive interest in this series?
I really think so, and it's been kind of surprising what a renaissance Dolly Parton has had in the past couple of years. You know, there was a movie, oh gosh, I'm blanking on the name now, but it was another Netflix movie that she produced and did some songs for, and people flipped out when they heard that. I think she's one of these people that's been around long enough and been successful and good as a person long enough that it's really come around to just being, there's nostalgia, there's kitsch involved in her songs and things, but there's also absolute love as well. And so you have this 8-episode anthology series that debuted today on Netflix called Dolly Parton's Heartstrings, and there's great cast members in it. You got Kathleen Turner, Jennifer Goodwin, Kyle Boreheimer, Cameron Manheim, tons of folks like that, and each episode takes its plot from a different song. So you have a Jolene episode and a Sugar Hill episode. And this is absolutely the wrong thing to say, but Dolly Parton is sort of the crypt keeper for it, where she introduces the thing.
No, that's exactly. But she looks great. You know, so for those people out there thinking that's an insult, it's the role of sort of the MC, the presenter. She looks great, really, you know.
Yes. And she's great, too. I think it's like we were talking about with the Christmas movies. It's the same sort of thing where people are looking for a warm blanket of a show sometimes, and that's what it's going to provide. You know what you're getting into when you're watching Dolly Parton's Heartstrings, and it absolutely leans into that.
We talked about the Disney Plus situation as well, and when it comes down to Star Wars, you know, we've got friends here at the station, obviously friends and the family and the kids, and Star Wars is kind of this transcendent like entertainment platform that has fans from like all ages and fan bases, but the whole streaming service gives you latitude, right, where everything doesn't have to be the biggest, most epic movie that's going to take over the blockbuster side of Hollywood. And so The Mandalorian has come out, and I've seen some comments kind of lukewarm, and I've seen a lot that are excited about it.
Yeah, I won't spoil anything for the third episode, which dropped today, and new episodes are dropping every Friday. But I love the show, and I love one of the things that I was thinking in particular about watching today's episode is I love how relatively small it is, that the episodes so far have ranged from about a half an hour to 40 minutes. They're very focused. They're sort of just very simple Western setups. Like the second episode almost had a wagon train robbery type thing going on in the middle. This one has a bit of a standoff thing like the first episode did. And again, they're just very simple. They're very small. They're not about saving the entire galaxy. They're focused on one particular mission. And the other thing that they're using very different directors. Today's episode is directed by a director named Deborah Chow, who does such a fabulous job with this. They're giving her directing job and the showrunning job, I believe, on the Obi-Wan Kenobi series that'll be coming at some point later. That's going to star Ewan McGregor from the prequel movies. So what they're doing here, I feel really effectively, is you have these big, overwhelming movies, which are great. Again, I'm going to be there opening day for Rise of Skywalker. But this allows for more breadth of the franchise, so to speak, that it allows it to take the story and go in different directions. It's not making the galaxy smaller, it's making it bigger. And it's very exciting, at least to me.
Yeah, and you get to kind of take some of these bite-sized adventures and take some characters that may not be as prominent. You know, not every situation has to be action figures and lunchboxes, right? You can do this.
Right.
Plus, what I loved about that they built it in that I think was some of the magic of the first early movies, and really all of them, right, is the humor. And you've got Jon Favreau who built in some of that, and I think that was one of the secret ingredients to the special sauce of the success of Marvel has been humor. And so they're building some funny into these.
And I think the cast is fantastic as well, which has been really working to bring in people who wouldn't necessarily be interested in Star Wars. I'll even speak for my own office at Decider, where there's certainly members of the staff who are huge Star Wars fans and some who could not care less. But the people who don't care less go, oh my gosh, Werner Herzog is in this. Carl Weathers is in this.
Yes.
This is so much fun. This is so weird. And that's part of the appeal as well, and I think that's great.
Yeah, Nick Nolte's in it. I'm sure he'd want to trade out. He's probably sending his shop of his character in The Mandalorian to try to switch out for that unflattering mugshot that everybody actually sees.
Yes, Nick Nolte is a pig man somehow looks better than him after a few days being drunk or whatever.
Well, people are going to get in there and see some things. If you have a couple things you want to mention quick before we get the information and let you go ahead and share it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you are checking out Disney Plus, another thing that I'd really recommend is a documentary called The Imagineering Story that's rolling right now. It's a very big deep dive into how Disney built its theme parks. And if you're a Disney nerd at all, or you're curious how that came together and the history of that, It's really fascinating. Another series that I'd really recommend checking out is called Encore, and it's about taking high school musical casts and reuniting them a decade or two down the road to perform the same show in the same parts, but with Broadway-style production values. And if you are ever a theater kid, it is one of the most stressful things you'll ever watch. But at the same time, it's really heartwarming and encouraging as well. Overall, there's a lot of stuff to discover, particularly on Disney Plus. I've been having a lot of fun watching it with my kids. We've been going back and watching through all the old princess movies and animated movies. And it's a neat service.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it.
Lots of stuff there, as well as some of the other ones. He is Alexander Zelbin. You can get him at decider.com. Alexander, thanks for jumping on the show today.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to probably send it to news, and then Jerry Nunn is waiting. So keep it here, 720 WGN. That is festive. 720 WGN, it is Dean here with you. In the Skyline studio, alongside someone who always is packed with festive holiday and calendar specific cheer, and he is in uniform as Santa's favorite elf, the one and only Jerry Nunn. Jerry, welcome to WGN. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me once again. Preparing for December, and I'm super excited.
How does it? And this is, I think, important for everyone out there. Either a cautionary tale to back up or check your game, or for advice for people to have constructive ways to prepare. How does a Jerry Nunn prepare for the holidays?
Right. Well,
do you train for it? I mean, is it?
it is kind of like a marathon.
Yes.
There's so many events all over the city. I just run all over. And the crazy thing is there's three and four of them every night. So it's just
how do you budget your time? Because everybody's looking for a piece of Jerry Nunn.
You know, the cherry on top gets the best, you know, the love. If it's an event I've been to a lot, like World of Chocolate, you know, I'm going to go to that one. You know, that's going to get some priority.
The name World of Chocolate sounds enticing.
Yeah. It's a really great fundraiser that's coming up. So that's what I'm doing coming up in December. So there's tons to talk about. Concerts are kind of winding down, but there's still a few good select ones in December.
Okay.
We're starting off with Celine Dion.
That's as big as it gets.
Yeah.
All the hits.
She doesn't come that often, right? She's been in Vegas a long time.
Yep.
And she finally has a new album. This is the Courage World Tour at United Center on December 1st. So she is going to be there.
What is the fan base for us? Because, you know, her music has been in some of the biggest movies of all time, certainly some of the biggest hits of all time.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned it. You know you've made it when you can just sit in Vegas and say, hey, world, just come to me. I don't have time to get around, right? I'm not going to visit you. And you can do one of those residencies. I mean, is it? And then the price point for something like that, because I think once you get to a point where you have fans that are a little bit older and maybe have some more discretionary income, those tickets can get pricey.
Oh, yeah. And United Center, we know how the different levels work. And, you know, you might be up in the rafters, but you still get to see Celine in person. You know, when is that going to happen? Not too often. She does have kind of a wide fan base, right? She's got some of the older folks.
Anybody that liked Titanic out there,
right.
I'm sure, right?
I mean, that was a huge, huge, huge hit. And I know people went up, I think she's in Milwaukee recently, so a lot of people traveled up there.
Okay.
But big LGBT following. I have a lot of friends that are going to see her. So, so that's exciting. She's coming. The Joe Bros are coming back. Jonas Brothers.
Oh, that's people in the know. That's their slang terms. The Joe Bros.
Yeah.
Now, they are one of the, and this is in no way a comparison to the overall music writing or ultimate success. We had the guys in that are doing Simon and Garfunkel the play. We had them in yesterday. And I thought of them as, you know, one of those bands that really exemplifies the whole greater than the sum of the parts. You know, they're great on their own, but when they get together, it's magic. For the Jonas Brothers, it seems like the same thing. Like, they're off by themselves, somewhat and relatively successful in whatever it is that they do, but when they get together, they make hits.
Right. I was surprised how well people took to them. I mean, it just went crazy. This is turning into, you know, one of the biggest boy bands around.
But why do you think, though, Jerry? Because they're okay. Is it I don't know what the... It's hard, right? It's an intangible, the appeal.
It's fun pop music. I think people really enjoy, and they, you know, like to have some kind of light music, and it's safe for kids. And they all do kind of have their own projects. You know, Nick's got his tequila, you know.
Jumanji, you know, right? Acting.
Oh, yeah, I know. I just saw him in Midway. He was really good in Midway.
Oh,
had,
okay.
Had a nice part in that. But they're playing Allstate Arena December 3rd. So that's a show to see. People missed them last time. This will be another opportunity to see them. So we also have a few shows at the Chicago Theater. Julie Andrews is coming December 10th.
Now, Julie Andrews, also known for her hits and yes. her incredible singing voice, but maybe it might be one of those great opportunities to do, because I could imagine her sort of an inside the actor's studio thing, kind of sitting with a table between the two ferns kind of set up, right? Kind of talking and answering Q&A about her career.
That's exactly what she's not singing.
She's not singing.
She's not singing.
Just going to play, like, let's go to the tape, you know?
Yeah, I guess it's going to probably be clips and speaking. She's got a new book out. That they sent me. So that's December 10th at the Chicago Theater.
Cool.
Then they also have Twas the Night Before Cirque. They're going to have a Cirque show running at Chicago Theater from November 29th to December 8th.
So it's Cirque du Soleil, but it's in sort of the holiday, sort of a Christmas holiday kind of theme, right? It's not right. necessarily the night before where they're just showing them doing all that preparation and practicing for the show, right?
Right. Exactly. So very holiday theme, kind of fun stuff. Good for all ages for that. And then Wilco is playing at Chicago Theater December 15th through the 19th.
Wow.
So they're doing kind of a rare appearance. They usually take a break, and, you know, this is a
break from the break.
Yes. But if you're fans of them, this is a cool opportunity. You know, I think four nights of seeing their show. So that's coming. Also, John Waters is coming back to town.
Oh,
I don't know
wow.
if you're a movie fan.
Sure, of course.
But he's doing a John Waters Christmas at Thalia Hall on December 3rd at 9 o'clock.
And is that going to be one of those kind of where you watch maybe a couple key movies, or he sits mm-hmm. there? Because Mel Brooks, a couple years ago, did something similar to that where you watched and it was Blazing Saddles, right? And then mm-hmm. he was able to kind of meet with the audience and do sort of the backstory, if you will, or Q&A. Is that what John Waters is doing?
Yeah. So it's a very adult show. So not one for the kids.
But it's good to know, though, right?
Because sometimes, like, you might wander in there thinking, oh.
Jerry, there have been times. We have three kids, and there are things that you remember differently as an adult that when you didn't necessarily consider all the things, you're like, oh, kids, this is fine for you. And you bring them in, and you're like, uh-oh, we got
to
go.
I know. That happens to me all the time. I forget all the cursing and all of that. And I'm not even old enough to watch an R-rated movie, according to my mother. So I still can't even see stuff. And I forget.
Or know. Things that are just inappropriate, and you're just like, well, I forgot all about that. You know, you just remember the good times.
Right. Like, people were talking about, one of my friends in my office, his kids were scared of The Jungle Book. And I'm like, oh, I thought The Jungle Book was pretty safe. They're like, no, they're scary animals. So, yeah, you never know with kids these days. I did go and see, I went and saw, what's the, oh, my gosh.
First syllable. Sounds like.
No, I went and saw Frozen 2, but we'll get to movies
you
later.
Did? Yeah. Oh, okay, good, because my youngest daughter mm-hmm. came back. She just turned 8, and of course, so she was right in sort of the sweet spot for Frozen 1, and we had to listen to all the subliminal addictive songs and all the, you know, the toys and the lunchboxes action, you know, all the things that go along with a big hit like that.
Yeah.
And so she got a chance to see it last night. I have not seen it, but she came in, and as much as maybe Rotten Tomatoes is going to pick that up a little bit, right? We'll get your thoughts. She was like, it's so good. She goes, it's better than the original.
Oh, wow.
That's what she said.
Strong words.
So I don't know. I mean,
okay. It's let's talk about movies a little bit later. We'll talk about it towards the end. Some more events that are coming. The Roots is doing a holiday tour December 30th at The Riv.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that sounds like a great, interesting show that's probably not, you know, ever in Chicago.
Yeah.
Just for the holidays, too. So it's a holiday tour. Andrew Bird is a violinist that's very popular with people and kind of a tradition.
Okay.
And he's doing December 9th through the 12th at the Fourth Presbyterian Church of Chicago in Streeterville. for us. So
see, it runs the game. Stuff for kids. You've got Frozen. Yeah. You got Frozen 2. Then you've got sort of the higher end of entertainment with great violinists that may be in town. Jerry Nunn is covering it all. When we come back from this break, not only is he going to talk about some more events that are happening, but we're also going to take, Jerry, he's not on the run, right? And so sometimes the running happens where he runs all the way to Ireland. We'll talk about his trip that happened there. And he's heading to, you know, one of our great on-the-road trip destinations to Indianapolis soon, too. So we're going to talk about that. Plus, you know, whatever other kind of crazy hijinks he's gotten himself into. So keep it here. Quick break. We'll be back after this. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane here with you. Along with me in studio is the one and only Jerry Nunn. You know him from nunontherun.com, at Jerry Nunn on Twitter and Instagram. He's a guy with his hand on the pulse of so much of the fun. And again, I mentioned in uniform as Santa's favorite elf today. He has the Santa hat on as we share some of the cool holiday stuff that is coming up before the end of the year here in Chicago. Concerts, great events. A lot of things for the family and then some for not the whole family, but certainly some people will enjoy it. But then also, too, is he covers things that are outside of Chicagoland. So how often, Jerry, do you travel? Because you do travel. You share a lot of it on social media. You are really out there quite a bit.
Yeah, I try to do about 3 trips a year and just do a variety. So this year I went to Philadelphia. Which is a great.
What did you think of Philadelphia? Now, do you like Philadelphia? Now, I haven't been there in a handful of years, and people that are from that area or Philadelphians or sports fans there, you know, they're fiercely loyal to Philadelphia and their support for it. I'm not the biggest fan, Well, maybe it's because we're spoiled here in Chicago. Is that it? Yeah. Or are there really cool things outside of the history? Kind of go see, you know.
Cheesesteaks? What about the cheesesteaks?
I mean, everything in moderation. I see that as a competitive Italian beef situation.
Oh.
But,
okay.
So you got cheesesteaks. Is that it?
No, the museum scene is really, really great and for all ages. They have things where you explore the brain and, kids love all that science stuff. And they had a superhero that had
Rocky? Balboa?
The Rocky statues there, of course. They had a superhero exhibit where I love all the superhero stuff, the history of comics, but those are traveling exhibits, all different kinds of great. I love the museum scene there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I had a great time. People were really friendly.
They were very nice. Because they're traditionally not nice.
Well, they were. It was a step
especially
away
with
from
that
New York.
Hat, Jerry. In history, I'm not sure on the sports side if you've ever heard the story, but I think they either threw beer cans at Santa or the Philadelphia Eagle fans attacked Santa in a game one time.
Oh my goodness!
Yes.
Well, Philadelphia is people have migrated over there from New York, so I might have that New York kind of big city. A lot of tattoos. I saw a lot of tattoos.
Good to know.
Yeah, but some great museums. The friendliest city was definitely Ireland. So
yeah, Ireland is even more than just a city. In fact, there's probably multiple cities within Ireland.
I just loved Ireland.
So you got a chance to go there for the listeners too. Jerry, he's an open book. So not only does he share all of the tourist attractions, but he'll also show you how Jerry Nunn lives when he is on the road. And one of the different traditions, when in Rome do as the Romans do, and when in Ireland apparently sleep with a very tiny bed next to you. What was that? So you showed for the listeners a hotel room, a regular kind of a twin bed, and then there was a very small bed. Was it a kid's bed or is it a pet bed? Or
I made a joke about it before. My leprechaun can bed. Stay there. So it's called a triple. Apparently, it's very popular in parts of Europe where they have an extra bed for people.
It wasn't even a whole bed.
It was not.
How big,
my long legs.
I was going to say.
Yeah, that was at the Ivy Garden Hotel, which was kind of in the middle of Dublin. I had a rare opportunity to go to Dublin and had an amazing time. I was with a press group from Europe.
Were there things, and of course on those press trips, and we've all been on those where they try to like super overschedule you to see and do and understand. Did you leave there? I don't know what kind of preconceived maybe opinion or notion you had about Ireland. Did you leave there with a lot of extra like, hey, I had no idea, but this is something that was really cool?
I learned a lot of history of Ireland, and even I didn't get overwhelmed by their itinerary. It wasn't until the very end where I was just like, okay, I need a little bit of a nap.
Like 17 bars. Let's pull it back.
A lot of Guinness. But I mean, just even visiting like the cemeteries and climbing the steps of a tower and
castles.
And like just learning all the crazy antics of people there and checking out the bar scene. But people were so, I've never been to a place anywhere in the world that was this friendly.
That's what I wanted to ask you too. is that, you know, because we always think of, you know, we're a melting pot and we, you know, generally like welcome everyone from the entire world in, and we're pretty supportive of other places and cultures. But sometimes you hear certain areas, you know, may not have the most, you know, positive or warmest kind of situation when it comes to America. But Ireland, they support us, right?
They you can just go up to anybody on the street. They'll give you directions plus a story. And they're just so like, I hope you know, find where you're needing to go, you know? And I'm like, wow, I need to be nicer to tourists in Chicago.
So you were on a press trip, so I'm guessing there were people from around the country that are in on it. But I always feel like, and we've shared it before, that Ireland and Chicago have even like maybe an elevated, even more special relationship, right? Where we dye the river. When you shared where you were from, did anybody mention, oh, wow, with a river?
There were some people that had been to Chicago. They don't understand Thanksgiving, you know, that's coming up, because they don't celebrate it. So I remember talking about Thanksgiving to like deaf ears there. The people were so incredibly just not only nice, but like my tour guides just showed me all around. I went to like a Game of Thrones tour. I went up to Belfast, really got to explore like Northern Ireland and check out some of the hotels there, the Grand Central, which was just amazing. Had tea there. You know, it's just like the whole great experience. A lot of U2 stuff. If you like U2, they had signed everything. I mean, they were everywhere.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So it is a place that Jerry Dunn would recommend. You know, if you're going to get out there, you're going to see someplace, Ireland is something to consider. On the show On the Road with Dane that we do on Saturdays, we talk about on the road trips. Can't get all the way to Ireland just driving, right? But Indianapolis is a place that we've gone to and highlighted, and certainly a lot of place on the auto racing side with the speedway there. But you're going to be kind of highlighting Indianapolis. I think that's great.
Right. I'm going right after this show. I'll be hitting the road and driving down there. And they've got a nice little itinerary for me down there. I'm staying at the Conrad Hotel, which I love the Conrad. It's one of my faves. And I've got a cabaret show tonight. They have a light show that's showing down there in the Capitol. And then I'm going to check out some bars and a nice restaurant called Livery. So they've kind of set me up with places to go. Tomorrow I've got a full day also trying some different restaurants. And
which restaurants are you going to try? Now, do you try to keep it sort of like a, you know, maybe a burger place, maybe a fine dining place, maybe, you know, a hot dog cart? I mean, do you try to have a little bit of everything?
That would be great. They kind of tell me where to go. They're okay. Like, here, go here. Tinker Street. I don't know if you've heard of that place. Bar 114. That's for drinks.
These are probably the hip and happening spots right now.
Yes. I'm just going to play the Love Handle for breakfast. I mean, that sounds delish. And Milk Tooth, I'm going on.
Milk Tooth is really good.
Is it really good?
Yeah, super. It's like one of those acclaimed places. I'm not sure if they've got a James Beard nomination or something like that, right? So okay. They've gotten a lot of well-deserved attention. And for those people that haven't been to Indianapolis, they've got this. Chicago's great. Chicago's, you know, one of the most beautiful cities in the world. People say that. Indianapolis is interesting. They've got that kind of monument circle thing, you know, which is really cool, that little circle. Mm-hmm. And then just the way that it's laid out, it's almost like you've created sort of a Disney for whether it's restaurant or theater or sports fans kind of layout, right? Everything's within walking distance. You can get everywhere. It's a pretty cool place.
Yeah, that's what they told me. I can just walk from my hotel and see the lights and all that. So I think what people have a tendency to do is just drive through Indianapolis, you know, on the highway. They don't stop and really get to take in the whole area. So, and that's why I've always done with Memphis. We've always driven through Memphis. So now after Indianapolis, I'm heading to Memphis, doing a whole little travel thing there.
What are you going to do in Memphis? Of course, what? Memphis got a great association with barbecue, which we're excited about, and music and Elvis and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I'm staying at the Hotel Napoleon. I'm going to Graceland. Of course, I've never been, and we've driven through it a zillion times, going to Oklahoma as a kid. So I'm doing that.
Now, are you an Elvis fan? Or at least aware of like his place in the lexicon of celebrity kind of thing.
Right. I appreciate what he has done. And I mean, I felt like you just have to go to Graceland one time. They also have me going to Sun Studios, which I'm super excited.
You going
to
record a demo?
I should. The singing nun.
We highlighted so many other musicians. Is there, right? Do you have like a secret musical ability that you haven't shared?
I mean, my Faith, you know, the song from George Michael, Faith, is one of my greatest hits. So we'll see how that goes. But just the Sun Studios where, you know, Million Dollar Quartet.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
All those people recorded. So I'm going to the Stax Museum. I'm going to have barbecue, of course. Going to Rendezvous. Just a few. Explore Beale Street. I mean, it's just going to be another cool part to the city.
I was super excited about Indianapolis and nothing against them, but Memphis sounds really cool.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it'll be just a whole other thing. But my family lives in Tennessee, so that's the whole goal, is I'll be there for Thanksgiving, and I'll be able to drive around.
Do a little bit of work on the way down, kind of highlight some really cool stuff.
Break up the trip.
On the way. Maybe make some music, and maybe if you know you've made a lot of music, it becomes addictive, and then part of the next big children's animated blockbuster hit. And so let's talk for the last couple of minutes about movies and
okay.
Frozen 2. You got a chance to see it. Was this part of like sort of a press showing? Or
they did went out at Navy Pier right there.
Now, were you a fan of the original?
I liked it.
Okay.
Now, that movie skews very young, right? It's very...
Yes.
Yeah, it's got a young fan base. So, I mean, I get it. But listen, I love a good musical. And I thought that's what Frozen, the first one, did very well.
Some big hits in there, for sure.
Yep, some singing hits. You got Idina Menzel. It's set up very, like, Wicked, very similar similarities you could, you know, pinpoint. But Frozen 2 does not have the kind of music that the first one did.
Okay.
So that was a little disappointing for me. So that's what I was looking for. But, I mean, some of the little kids they're still going to love it, like you said, and stuff. And it was great that, you know, Idina and Kristen got their walks on the, you know, their stars on the Walk of Fame this week. So that was good.
So maybe slightly underwhelming, but still, because of the star power, just the momentum of the first one, even these years later, they have another hit on their hands. And for probably the desired demographic, the little kids, they're still going to love it because it's got all their friends and fans as well. So people hear that. We'll have links up at WGNradio.com. And in the last like minute or so, Jerry, let people know where they can keep up with your adventures as you continue to stay on the run.
Oh, sure. So it's Nunn, and my last name's N-U-N-N. So I've played off that and made nunnontherun.com, and that is where people can find me, nunnontherun.com, and I post all my events and exploits and all that. So
any cool things you want to point to that people should check out? I know they're looking forward to your future adventures.
Yeah, so Chris Kindle Market, people should go to that. You know, there's tons of holiday pop-ups in Wrigleyville, the zoo lights at Lincoln Park Zoo, Winter Wonderfest at Navy Pier. There's just so much going on around Christmas time.
He knows it all. He shares it all. It's Jerry Nunn, Nunn on the Run again. We'll have links. Right now, though, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.